The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome in, students of the game. My name is Alex Bauman. And as always, I'm joined by my co-hosts, Nathan Gladwell and Gray Oldenburg. Happy New Year's, guys. Happy holidays.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. For Christmas. Y'all do anything fun over the holidays, whether that's Christmas and New Year's?
No, just stay home and enjoy time with family. And, my fun starts tomorrow. I'm headed out to Las Vegas tomorrow with some friends. Nothing over the holidays, no.
Yeah, like Gray said, a lot of time with family. Maybe a little too much time if you under it. But found time to play basketball. That's an important thing, of course.
Any New Year's resolutions y'all want to share?
Man, I don't know the last time I thought about New Year's resolution.
Yeah, New Year's resolutions, they'd be lucky to last a week for me. I've tried a lot of different, like the very basic things, like, oh, cut out soda, or, you know, start working out more, or do this, or, you know, diet more, or stuff like that. And that's not going to last. So I don't bother with it anymore.
So you're going to be the January 1st today at the gym? With all the other people.
Yeah. Sign up for a gym membership you'll never use.
Go there once, get motivated, and then you wake up the next day and you're sore and you're like, nah, I'm good. All right, guys. We had a big announcement this past weekend with the Spring Football Leagues. And I think we covered a couple weeks or a few months ago, Nathan. The USFL and the XFL have officially announced their merger. It will become the UFL or the United Football League. And begin play on March 30th, 2024 this year. And the first game will be between the two champions of the respective leagues, the USFL's Birmingham Stallions and the XFL's Arlington Renegades. And then the teams that survive both leagues, the USFL Conference has the Stallions, the Memphis Showboats, the Michigan Panthers, and oddly enough, the Houston Roughnecks, who played in the XFL. So only three USFL teams managed to survive. And then the XFL Conference, you have the Arlington Renegades, the St. Louis Battlehawks, San Antonio Brahmas, and then the DC Defenders. Well, what are y'all's thoughts on these two leagues combining now instead of competing?
Well, Alex, when we both looked at this originally, both leagues by themselves were struggling to make money and stay afloat on their own. And with past spring football leagues, that's always been the struggle, is that you're competing with other spring football leagues or you're competing with the NFL. Well, now what they've done, combining the league, I know they cut out multiple teams, but they make one product for everyone to watch at once. And they kind of like what is a pipeline to the NFL. So it's kind of like a semi-pro team being able to produce better talents so these NFL teams can sag it up. At the end of the day, I think that this league will work out better than most just because it's united. There's finances are all together and they're not struggling to fight for TV deals or anything like that.
Yeah, just like Nathan just said, it's all about the competition with these spring football leagues. You know, people are going to watch them, but the split, the having two different leagues to try and follow and try and get into and go to the games, especially some of these cities that don't have NFL teams like Birmingham in particular. But it's all about that competition. Well, now there's not going to be any competition for the UFL. It's this one league and it's going to be happening, you know, right as March Madness is over. No NFL, no college football. It's really just going to be this and the NBA playoffs as big sports people. So people are going to attract to this and they're going to be missing football by this time. And, you know, the college and the pro season for 2024 are going to be well far away at this point. So I think this is going to be good. I think it's going to be fun and I can't wait to watch it.
I think Nathan kind of pointed it out a little bit with the TV deals and all that. The USFL was pretty much owned by Fox, if I'm not mistaken. And then the XFL had a partnership with ESPN. So they're going to be on both stations now rather than just being on that one particularly. I believe the USFL had some games on Peacock too. So I think that's a big deal, is getting that exposure out there. And then you're getting the backing from guys like The Rock, who are in the XFL, being able to back this entire league now. So I think it was a great thing for everybody, like y'all mentioned. Sad to see some of those teams go, but something had to give to get this league going, because you can't have, what would that have been, 16 teams, something like that?
Yeah.
It would have not been viable. They would have spent way too much money. All right, college football, Gray. Let's just go ahead and pull the Band-Aid off, rip it off. Auburn loses to Maryland. What happened?
Yeah, if I knew that answer, I'd be coaching for the Auburn Tigers right now. But I don't know. That is not a, you know, this has kind of been the story of this of Hugh Freeze's first year in terms of on the field production. It's been inconsistency. I don't know what really the game plan was. You know, I mean, there's no tape on those two backup quarterbacks. That's always been something that Auburn has problems with when backups quarterback come in, even though the only tape you've got on Maryland is Taulia Tagovailoa. And it's a completely different Maryland team. But then again, it's a completely different Auburn team, especially on the defensive end, where you have one returning defensive back in this game. You lost probably your best player, Marcus Harris, in the defensive line. Maryland was just able to do whatever they want offensively in the first three drives. Now, give Auburn's defense credit. They stopped Maryland and held them to 3 points after the first three drives. And if they play like that the whole game, Auburn probably wins this game. You know, funny enough, as bad as Auburn's offense played, that's probably how it turns out. But the defense, I think they adjusted well. A lot of young guys on that defense, especially the defensive backfield. It's a learning game. You know, especially bowl games like this that are not New Year's Six. We're not playing an unbelievable team. Maryland's not an unbelievable team. Maryland's solid. Maryland's not, you know, a ranked opponent or something like that. You use this as a growth and development for the following year. And I think that's kind of what they wanted to do. They kind of wanted to see this defense, especially the defensive backfield, get exposed. And they did. They did. The first three drives, they got exposed over and over and over again. And I'm proud the way they adjusted. Now, offensively.
Faith the Lord.
What in the world? All right. So I understand, after watching Peyton Thorne against Georgia and Alabama this year, Peyton Thorne's got promise. You think you watch those two games, you say, okay, you get some wide receivers around him. You bring your whole running back class back. You bring a lot of offensive linemen back, and you bring your tight ends back next year. You give Peyton Thorne a full offseason with those guys. Maybe he could be pretty good. Then you watch the New Mexico State games and the Maryland game, and it's like, maybe we should have gone after a portal quarterback. Maybe this is a wide open competition, because Peyton just didn't do anything. Hey, it was unbelievable. The pick six that he threw was the worst throw he's made all year. He completely telegraphed it on the out route, even though Rivaldo Fairweather and Jay Fair were standing with nobody within 30 yards of them on that play. It's just an easy pitch and catch, but he decides to throw right to the Maryland defensive back. It's those type of plays that can't happen. And then they pulled the plug on Thorne late in the game. And we tried with Holden Gariner. Gariner seemed to be a little excited. Every throw he was making was high. Every throw. It was just high. And you don't have receivers yet. You don't have receivers yet that can go up and make that play. You do. The two of them are playing another Armor All-American game this week that are going to be there next year, and Coleman and Perry Thompson. But you don't have them yet. Camden Brown is not that guy at all.
Good old pan hands.
And then you bring in, you take Holden out, you bring in this freshman quarterback who I when we signed Hank Brown, I assumed he was a depth piece, a worst case scenario, a guy that's, you know, he's going to be the second or third string for his entire Auburn career. And he came in and lit it up, went 7 of 9 for over 130 yards, and it drove the offense down the field twice. So I don't know what to think about this team offensively. It also was a little weird that we were able to run so well against Alabama and run so well against Georgia, and Maryland just stuffed us every single time at the offensive line. Our offensive line got dominated in this game against Maryland after dominating Alabama 3 weeks prior. I don't understand. It's just inconsistency. The silver lining for Auburn fans, which you need to think about, is this past year was Hugh Freeze's worst roster that he will ever have at Auburn. Talent is coming in. The talent gap was so big between Alabama, between Georgia, Texas A&M, LSU, teams that you're going to play year by year. Talent gap was so big because of what the potato head did from Idaho, not at Auburn. It was so big that Hugh Freeze had the game plan to get that gap up while also spending all of his time recruiting and to try and get this roster talent back up. And look, there's a reason they say Auburn's one of the hardest jobs because of that fact, because your two biggest rivals are probably the two of the best teams in the country. But I think change is coming. I think it's going to be better. I just got to give him time and trust what he's doing and see what happens.
Yeah. You know, Alex, I'm going to add this piece. What it comes down to for me, Gray, is Auburn's future rides on the fact that they don't have a unbelievable QB coming in. If you stick with Peyton Thorne, I feel like that's the completely wrong decision after watching him this year. I don't feel like he can develop any more than he has. I had the same problems with him when y'all went and got him from Michigan State. I watched him play there, and he kind of has the same struggles, albeit he had a few games where he just played unbelievably out of his mind, and then he returned to his former self. It's going to be about the development of the players, number one, coming in from your recruiting class, and then number two, building on that chemistry. Mm-hmm. Because if your team does not have any chemistry, then you might as well kiss the season goodbye. Yeah. We've seen multiple teams that have just been thrown together from the portal. Same thing happens in college basketball. I say it all the time. If you just throw teams together and they don't have a chemistry, they're going to fall apart. So I think those two things are the most important for Auburn, especially next season going forward. But you got to find a quarterback. And I feel like you just had DJ Uiagalelei. He just transferred to Florida State. I feel like that was a talented QB that Auburn should have went after. And I'm sure there's going to be some other guys available. But it has to be done this offseason. If not, then next season is going to be in jeopardy.
Yeah, KJ Jefferson is committed to UCF, and then yep. Cam Ward declared for the draft. So that portal is drying up real quick. I don't think Peyton Thorne's the answer for Auburn either. I mean, he had Keon Coleman and Jaden Reed of Michigan State and did nothing with that. And he had that one good year, right, with Kenneth Walker under Mel Tucker.
Discussed that already.
Yeah, so I really don't, like Nathan said, I think Peyton Thorne's going to be the answer, regardless of what the coaching staff brings in, because he's proven, even with great receivers, he can't get it done. Even in the Big Ten, when it's rather weak, and the SEC next year, it's going to be pretty difficult, especially with Auburn's schedule. Great. I don't know if you saw the news or not, but Auburn hired Charles Kelly, the former Alabama assistant, Colorado defensive coordinator, to come in and I believe be the co-defensive coordinator and secondary coach. Mm-hmm. So any thoughts on Hugh Freeze making that hire?
Big time. That's huge. That's pure recruiting right there. Charles Kelly is one of, if not the best recruiters, the defensive back position in college football, former Auburn player. So he knows Auburn, and these former Auburn players seem to do pretty well recruiting for Auburn. You talk about Tavon Reed, Marcus Davis, Cadillac Williams, even Travis Williams when he was at Auburn. I know he's at Arkansas as the defensive coordinator right now after he followed Gus to UCF. But I think it's a big hire. Wesley McGriff had some, I believe he had some off the field things to take care of, family issues during bowl practice, and then was poached by Texas A&M. So he stepped away before the bowl practice. And I know that hurt the defensive backfield, especially with it being, all of our defensive backs declaring for the draft and opting out of the bowl game. I think this hire is very, very good. I mean, you just look at the recruit list that Charles Kelly has made at his time at Louisville, at his time at Alabama, at his time at Colorado. It's impressive, and it's a very, very good hire for Hugh Freeze.
Nathan, you're shaking your head. Not a Charles Kelly fan?
Yeah, after what he did at Bama, that was probably some of the worst years of our defensive backs being the softest players out on the field, and I had enough of him. And honestly, he didn't impress me at Colorado, but I guess one man's trash is another man's treasure. Maybe. We'll see. But if Gray says it's a great hire, then I'll agree with him.
Again, the benefit.
I think it's a great hire specifically for recruiting. I mean, you look
at if you
want Will Anderson, do you like Caleb Downs? I know Caleb Downs is pretty good. That was
Recruiting, but do you like the coach?
The recruit list is very, very good. Your defensive back coach is Zach Etheridge. He's the one who's going to coach the team.
Yeah.
He's the one who coached DJ James, Jalen Simpson, Nehemiah Pritchett. Nehemiah Pritchett was not anything to what he came in to be when Zach Etheridge took over the defensive back job. The coach is Zach Etheridge. The recruiters are Zach Etheridge and Charles Kelly. I think adding him to that recruit list back there as a former Auburn player, I think it's a good hire.
Yeah, I think Charles Kelly is a good recruiter, but when it comes to coaching, there's a huge question mark there. But like Greg kind of touched on, there's a lot of coaching around him that's going to kind of balance that out. Whether that be the defensive coordinator, Ron Roberts, or secondary coach, Zach Etheridge, to help him out. All right, number 5, Florida State. Number 6, Georgia. I think we got to touch on this game just because of how big the margin of victory was, 63-3, which is the largest margin of victory in bowl history, topping Georgia's 58-point win over TCU in last year's national championship game. I feel like I have to ask this question to y'all. Did this game do anything to legitimize the committee's decision to leave out Florida State?
Well, honestly, I don't think so. Only because I look at the game and the amount of opt-outs and the amount of people who have transferred or basically declared for the draft. It's not the same rosters. It's not the same teams that have been playing the entire season. So I don't think it legitimizes anything that the committee has done. But I think you also do have to look at what happened in the game and the coaching that went on, because in a game like this, it comes down to who has a better coach. Because young talents played on both sides of the ball for both teams. And Kirby Smart is just flat out the better coach in this game. And that's the reason they won 63-3. And Georgia still had a lot of pieces that they had playing during the season. But Mike Norvell, I felt like he failed to prepare his team. I think there might be a little bit of a culture problem at Florida State, especially after being left out of the playoff. Everyone just quit on their team, which that as a head coach, that's something I would never let happen. I mean, quitting on your team like that, quitting on your teammates who had played all year long. You had a goal at the end of the season. I'm sure they came short of that goal, but wouldn't you want to prove a point in your bowl game that you were the team that was supposed to be in? And yeah. I feel like by everyone sitting out, they're just laying down and playing victim, because that's what they've done ever since the committee came out with their rankings and put Alabama in instead. I felt bad originally for Florida State when they were left out. But after 3 weeks of their fans crying on Twitter and all these other social media apps, and people wanted to bring up all these different excuses for Florida State, it was good to watch Georgia just absolutely murder them on live TV. They deserved every second of it. Mike Norvell in that season, I don't know. I really attribute Florida State this season to TCU last season, because I don't see them making another run like this. They're losing a bunch of key players. And Mike Norvell, if he's actually a great coach, he will get them ready next season, but I doubt it.
Better be careful, Nathan. Yeah, Florida State might sue you now. Better be careful.
Bring it on.
I think Nathan's point there at the very end is the way to think about it is Mike Norvell didn't have this team ready to play for this game. It just didn't look like their scout team belonged on the same floor as Georgia's scout team, because they each had the exact same amount of opt-outs. And I know there were some different opt-outs and very different, you know, contributors playing and not playing and that sort of thing, which you got to take in consideration. And I don't think it affects what the committee's done, because the committee didn't see this game before deciding on who should be in the playoffs, which I don't think they made the wrong decision. I don't think they made the right decision. It depends on which way you look at it. But the point that Nathan just made there at the end of next year. This is like Mike Norvell has had what, 3 or 4 years now. Now he started his first year. They lost to Jacksonville State at home. And to think about, he almost had Florida State in the playoffs this year. And then this downfall of not getting in and complaining about not getting in, and, you know, Florida State suing the College Football Playoff Committee or something like that. And then getting beat by Georgia by 60 points, who the team that got in over you went to Atlanta and beat Georgia. It's a bad, bad look. You're losing a lot of pieces. I know right before we started recording, the DJ Uiagalelei, or however you say his name, committed there. That's their starting quarterback. It's going to be huge for Mike Norvell to get this team ready for next season. And it's going to be the tall tale right there.
Yeah, I kind of compare this game to what happened with Alabama and Kansas State last year, where Alabama got left out of the college football playoff in favor of somebody like TCU. And it could have been easy for Bryce Young and Will Anderson to say, you know what, let me just go ahead and wait for the NFL draft and not play in this game. But they did, and they went out and they beat Kansas State pretty good. And they were like, then they saw the Georgia TCU game in the championship and were like, you know, we played Georgia a little bit closer than that. We would have at least. So, and then you can see Florida State here. It's like the same thing with Alabama last year, but Florida State's players decide, you know what, we're good, we don't want to play. And then they got walled by Georgia, and then the argument kind of dies down, regardless of what you think about the player sitting out and everything. But still, when you don't have backups that can come in and somewhat can compete and even score a touchdown, there's maybe some issues there with Florida State. Nathan, I know you saw this comment and you about had a come apart. During media availability ahead of the Rose Bowl, Alabama quarterback Jalen Milroe revealed to reporters that former Crimson Tide offense coordinator Bill O'Brien told him that he should not play quarterback. I'll give you the floor, Nathan, because I know you're a huge Bill O'Brien fan, president of the fan club and all that. So I'll let you go ahead.
I mean, talk about one of the worst offensive coordinators I have ever seen at the University of Alabama. He has been gone from the university for months. He is with the Patriots, yet he still is trying to ruin everything. He almost ruined our season this year. He wasted Bryce Young, Jameer Gibbs, all our talented offensive pieces last year. I mean, that team should have won a national championship, but no, we had to deal with Bill O'Brien and Pete Golding for a whole, two seasons? never, ever I want to experience that again. I mean, Bill O'Brien's basically tanking the Patriots into the ground right now. Just look what he's putting out there on the field in the NFL. I knew that was coming. Try to warn everyone. I mean, you could just look at the tape from Alabama last season, say, oh, this is what Bill O'Brien does. He runs screen passes and then tries to run up the middle on third down and says, oh, we can't do anything. Guess we have to punt the ball. So that's basically what happens. But then he goes and tells some of the most talented players on the roster are saying, hey, I don't think you should play the position you want to play or the position you've been playing since high school, just because I don't think you can. And that he is the definition of a naysayer right there. Lank all season, let all naysayers know. Bill O'Brien is probably the biggest naysayer out there, and I am glad he is not with the University of Alabama anymore.
Anything to follow it up with, Gray, about Bill O'Brien?
You know, two specific comments, I guess. I'll say the Patriots won 6 Super Bowls with Tom Brady. They deserve every single bit of Bill O'Brien tearing their franchise to the ground. I feel bad for Mac Jones, Bailey Zappi, and all the players that are on that offense specifically, but tear the Patriots into the ground. My second thing, and I'm not trying to relate these two players, even though they do play the position, you know, sort of similarly, I would say that this quote and what Jalen Milroe, you know, revealed and told what Bill O'Brien told him sounds a lot like what a lot of the scouts said about Lamar Jackson coming into the draft. Sounds a lot like that. And, he should probably go to running back or maybe even like a, you know, flex receiver or something like that. Like, he's an incredible athlete, but he probably won't play quarterback at the next level. Lamar Jackson's about to lead his team to a Super Bowl. He's already won an MVP. He's going to win another MVP, and he's going to win the Super Bowl because that Ravens team is incredible. and led by Lamar Jackson. So it just shows you that these guys, especially Bill O'Brien, don't know what they're talking about when it comes to scouting or anything like that. And I know Nathan could speak on, he doesn't know anything about play calling either. he might not know anything about football. You see what he did to the Texans. You saw what he did to the Texans. Then Alabama hired him. I thought that was hilarious as an Auburn fan. And then he almost tore Alabama to the ground, wasted, just like Nathan said, wasted Bryce Young, Jahmyr Gidge, Jameson Williams, all those guys, completely wasted him. And then he's tearing the Patriots into the ground. Why does this guy still have a job? I don't understand.
I mean, if Jalen Milroe is not a quarterback to Bill O'Brien, I feel really bad for Patriots fans. I really do, man. Because
well, I mean,
if
he thinks their Bailey, quarterback problem, Alex.
I mean, if he thinks Bailey Zappe is more of a quarterback than Jalen Milroe, then I don't know. He must be drinking or something, because that is some wildness right there.
Goofy juice.
Something. I know Jalen Milroe had a rough start to the year, but to not let him develop and not let him play the position he's naturally supposed to be playing, I mean, a dude needs to, like Gray said, find something else, find a new line of work. And obviously not in the scouting department, because that is not even his forte. And last thing for college football before we get into college basketball, guys, is per NFL insider Adam Schefter, Michigan head football coach Jim Harbaugh has hired football agent Don Yee to represent him. Yee has deep NFL ties, represents Tom Brady and Sean Payton. Is Harbaugh going to leave for the NFL after the season, regardless of what happens in the CFP?
I think it depends on what situation opens up in the NFL.
You got the Chargers.
Yeah. Yeah. If it's the Chargers, then yes, I would. if I was Harbaugh, get out of Michigan while you can. Not saying Michigan's a bad situation. I'm saying that you're in a bad situation for Michigan. But then you look at who is Michigan going to hire. And we're already seeing a lot of things about like Brian Kelly leaving LSU after the season that he had this year, you know, with a Heisman Trophy winning quarterback and going back into the Big Ten. I know Notre Dame wasn't in the Big Ten, but they're basically in the Big Ten. I think it would be funny. I could easily see Harbaugh going back to the NFL, though. That's where he was made. That's what he's for. That's what his coaching style is for. That's what his offense is for, that he runs. So I could easily see it, and I could see it working in the NFL as much as it's worked for Michigan. I could see it working for the NFL or in the NFL at a specific, you know, spot. It really does depend on what opens up. I think the Chargers will be a decent.
I don't know. This is something I've been back and forth on all season long. I think what it will come down to is if Jim Harbaugh can win a national championship this season. If he doesn't, I think he's gone. I think it's a make or break deal. But you look at what all he's been through at Michigan this season. You talk about the number of times he's been suspended, six times to be exact. I mean, that's a crazy number, and that's twice in one season for six games. You look at the whole situation as like Connor Stallions, this whole sign stealing, hacking film and all of that. That leaves a reputation that tarnishes reputations for universities. So like look at Michigan's reputation now. Everyone thinks they're a bunch of cheaters. Jim Harbaugh has consistently said that he knew nothing about it. He has to know something about it. I don't know if this was planned. I don't know if this is anyway, going away from that, it's going to come down to January 8th. If he can get a team there, and if he can win a national championship, because if he doesn't, I think he is looking for the next flight to Los Angeles or wherever he wants to go and coach. Because I'm sure any NFL team would want to go after him. He's had a decent resume for some time now. And just look what his brother does. I mean, best team in the NFL. So if he's even half as good of a coach as his brother, he will do good in the NFL again.
All right, let me ask this hypothetical here, guys. So, Gray, if the Carolina Panthers were to hire Jim Harbaugh, how happy would you be? And then, Nathan, I know Dennis Allen's still with New Orleans Saints, but if they don't make the playoffs, which is highly unlikely right now because the Buccaneers win and they're in and they play the Panthers, so that's pretty much a almost foregone conclusion there. If Dennis Allen gets fired, would you be okay with Jim Harbaugh as a head coach down in New Orleans?
Yes. Nathan? Absolutely.
I don't like Jim Harbaugh. I'm sorry. It's not my...
We had Frank Reich this year, so yeah.
Yeah, sure. And I've dealt with Dennis Allen, and he makes me want to call my eyes out every Sunday, but I don't know if I'm going to suit to the level of Jim Harbaugh. Yeah, I'm sorry. We can go find some other head coach somewhere else. I'm good.
Well, that's two different vast answers there, but I guess we're on two different ends of the spectrum with the Saints and
that's
Panthers.
That's very true, yeah. Y'all are about to, y'all can be in the playoffs. I don't even know what the playoffs
are. No, Trey, we are in so much pain right now. We can't decide what we're doing. We have to win when we're not supposed to win and lose when we're not supposed to. So we're just a very bipolar team with
this is giving the Bears the
bad cap issue. Terrible. Worst I've ever seen. I'm not going to talk about Saints football.
I mean, the Saints have been a quarterback away since Drew Brees retired. So
yeah, and we went after Derek Carr, Alex. What does that tell you? And then we went and said, oh, here's your $115 million contract for 4 years. We're just going to, you know, break our bank that we already don't have money in. I'm good. I don't want
to
talk about that.
All right, let's get on to something that makes Nathan even more riled up. Some college basketball, starting with the Alabama Crimson Tide, starting at the season 8-5 as we head into SEC play this weekend, and they're going to be playing Vanderbilt on Saturday. Nathan, we weren't really here for the Arizona aftermath, and that was a pretty big explosion from me and you after watching that game. So what are your thoughts on the Crimson Tide this season? And then if you want to touch on that Arizona game as well.
At the end of the day, they're competitors. They have already went through a lot of adversity. You look at the non-conference schedule they've had to play through. We already touched on Purdue, that game a little bit. But I feel like every single quad one team they have played this season, it felt like it was on the road. And the officiating standpoint wasn't great. But we also struggled to shoot. We struggled to create offense. And then the biggest thing, we couldn't stop fouling. And I don't know if that's an officiating problem or if it's just us playing too physical. Because what I have seen, especially in the game versus Arizona, we were matching the amount of physicality they were producing. And then in the first half, the refs were on the play. And then the second half, it's like we were the team that was being burned at the stake for even touching someone. So defense is out the window. We don't have a true center. So that's been the struggle for the first part of the season. Got to have someone fill in that spot. We can shoot the ball. It has been shown that we can shoot the ball. it just doesn't drop at the right time, I guess. It didn't drop against some of these bigger teams. And that's the reason why we lost a lot of them. I think that if we went back and played those games, say we played like Arizona 10 different times, I think we can win a good 4 to 5 of those just because in those games we shoot the ball better. Alex, you saw Grant Nelson in that game. He was like, what, 1 for 11? He was shooting like Klay Thompson.
He came back. I think he was like 3 for something, but he was struggling. It wasn't good shooting. But
the entire team was struggling. They didn't shoot the ball well. But you look at these past few games, I know they're against lesser opponents, Eastern Kentucky, and that was a blowout. We shot the ball very, very good. I think that was like 50% three-point shooting. So that started quick, and then we played Liberty on Saturday. You got the win 101-56. I like the way we were shooting the ball in both those games. I like the way that we were moving the ball around. The ball didn't get stuck in Mark Sears' hands, and we didn't ask him to ISO or do anything like that. We actually had a competent offense where everyone was swinging the ball and setting screens and rolling through the basket, and it just felt a lot better. And then you look at the defensive end, and besides the beginning of the first half, I think they played pretty lights out defense, created a lot of turnovers, forced Liberty's guards into bad decisions, and really just controlled the rim. And that is what we need to do from here on out, especially going to SEC play. At the end of the day, I think the Saints fine. They have a lot of talent. They are younger. They're a little bit more inexperienced. Outside of a guy like Mark Sears and Aaron Estrada, team's fairly young. So I think it's just going to be a matter of clicking down the stretch, and I think they'll be fine. It's definitely, I don't think we'll be the same team as last year. You don't have Brandon Miller on your team. You don't have any more close to the amount of talent as you did. But you know what? play through this year, you got a very, very good recruiting class for next year already set up.
Yeah, I think the biggest pros and cons with Alabama are the pros are when they do shoot and when they shoot the ball well, they get to 100 and you're going to beat a lot of teams scoring 100 points. I know it's going to be more difficult when you get into the SEC play and getting to where you're playing two games a week relative to one game a week. Just, you know, fatigue wise and stamina wise. But when they shoot the ball well. But they do live and die by that three. That Arizona game specifically, if Alabama makes the threes that they made in the Liberty game or even the Eastern Kentucky game or something like that, or games that they played early in the year, they blow Arizona out in that game, regardless of the officials or anything. So I think that's the biggest thing with Alabama, and also the fact that Alabama doesn't have a true center. I think that is going to hurt. I think somebody's got to step up at that position, whether it be Pringle, whether it be Grant Nelson, whoever steps up at that position.
Why are you even playing?
They've got to step up and start playing, because there's some really good centers in the SEC, or even not just centers, just big man in the SEC that Alabama's going to have to guard in the post, in the lane, the high post. That I don't think they have a guy for that right now, but obviously early in the year, this team is battle tested extremely. This team's going to come into the SEC play ready to play.
I think Alabama is a bit frustrating for me this year. I think they know it's done a great thing reviving that program recruiting wise. But when it comes to coaching, there's a lot of question marks for me with Nate Oates. I think he does a great job, like I said, recruiting, but it gets into these close games and it just feels like he can't game plan correctly. Arizona, I mean, every game this season, as we've lost a close game, look in the past few years, he's won a few big games here and there. When he gets to the tournament and he gets in some issues here and there. And it's just this thing where, like you said, Gray, Alabama lives and dies by the three-pointer. And while that's great when you have somebody like Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, and Kevin Durant, when you're the Golden State Warriors, Alabama doesn't have those guys. Mark Pierce, I think, is great. Grant Nelson is not going to be shooting lights out. I don't know why he continues to try to. I don't know why Nate Oates continues to try to run this offense where he has shooting big men when the grand scheme of things he doesn't. I don't think he's had a great shooting big men. I don't know if Clowney was okay. Alex Reese was okay. But outside of that, I mean, it's just like he continues to run this offense like he's the Golden State Warriors. He's Steve Kerr. And he doesn't have the talent like he's Steve Kerr. And he needs to realize that, hey, we can take these mid-ranges to get ourselves back in the game, get comfortable, see these shots fall, and we can do something other than lobs under the basket. We can do some high-low action, stuff like that. It's just the lack of creativity on the offensive end is a struggle for me with Nate Oates, and I think it needs to change, because when you play teams in the SEC and you can't make three-pointers, you're going to have to find something else to do, because when you play somebody like Kentucky, they're going to get up into you and guard you. Auburn's going to get up to you and guard you. Gray, you can attest to that. There's a lot of other teams that are going to be really defensive. They're going to be, like Arizona, very physical, and you're going to have to battle. And I think Alabama, like you said, Gray, is battle-tested. And even though they didn't win a lot of those games, or much, I think they won, like, the biggest game they won was the Oregon game. But I think they have a lot of talent. I think they can do it. But Nate Oates has got to adapt to his coaching. He can't just continue to huck up three-pointers and pray they go in and shoot 43-pointers like they did against Arizona when they're down. It's got to change. All right, Gray, the Auburn Tigers. But what are your thoughts on them heading into SEC play with them playing Penn this week and then as a tune-up game and then Arkansas on Saturday?
Yeah, I think Auburn's a different scenario. I think they're battle-tested as well, but they're battle-tested against really, really good mid-majors. They obviously, Alabama has the best non-conference schedule or the hardest non-conference schedule, one of the hardest ones I've ever seen. I mean, it relates to like non-conference schedules that Kentucky used to play in the day, because they would just bull through the SEC, so they would need some quad one wins on their schedule in the non-conference back in the early 2000s or late 2000s, early 2010s. But this Auburn team's battle-tested in the mid-major way, and they've played some really good games. I think the biggest thing for this Auburn team is after the Appalachian State loss, it just looked like the offense had fallen off from what we had saw from the first few games. And then that completely changed against Indiana and has changed ever since. especially with the rise of Jalen Williams. Jalen Williams, the first few games, wasn't what the Jalen Williams that we thought we were going to get, or what even what the Jalen Williams that we saw last season when he averaged, what, 16 and 8. Well, all of a sudden, since that Indiana game where Jalen Williams went for 24 points, had 8 assists, 7 rebounds, 4 steals, something like that, he's been unbelievable every single game, even if he's not scoring the most points, because all of a sudden, one game, Aiden Holloway will go for 24, or Jani Broome will go for 24. This team is unbelievably balanced and very, very deep. You know, you look at the top 15 or top 20 scorers in terms of points per game in the SEC, there's not one single Auburn player on there, but they've got a top 15 ranked offense in the country because of how balanced and how deep they are. And it shows, and it starts with Jalen Williams and Jani Broome in the front court. It really does. Especially with Aiden Holloway being a freshman, he's going to have freshman moments. Trey Donaldson's really turned it up. I think he's been way better than I thought he was, or way better than I thought we were going to get out of him. But the emergence of those two guys in the front court, and then the bench depth. I mean, you talk about guys like coming off the bench, like Dylan Cardwell, that guy would start for most of the SEC teams. He really would. As a senior, he would. He's an unbelievable defensive guy. KD Johnson coming off the bench is a spark plug. It's either going to be really, really good from KD or really, really bad. Chad Baker-Mazzara has been incredible. He's much better than I thought he was going to be, even on the defensive end. Denver Jones starts getting his feet under him. This Auburn team can beat anybody, but they can also lose to anybody. They're the deepest team in the SEC, no doubt. They can go 11 deep without missing a beat. And I think that's how they're going to win in the SEC, and that's how they're going to have to win in the SEC. Obviously, you get you're going to be Arkansas's Super Bowl when you go to Bud Walton Arena on the 6th, because for some reason Arkansas loves to play Auburn and Alabama, and they treat it like Kansas or North Carolina or UConn or somebody like that coming into Bud Walton Arena. So it's going to be a tough environment, and it's going to be a tough game. No matter how bad Arkansas has been this season, it's going to be a tough one. And that's one way to, that is one way to open up. You get one more tune-up game tomorrow against Penn. A good Penn team, a Penn team that's projected to win their conference and be very, very good this year. Already had some good wins. They went up and beat Villanova at Villanova this year. So that's a good team coming into Neville Arena. And then you get going in the SEC play. I'm excited. I think this team's got extreme potential, but we'll just have to see.
You see, what I like that for Auburn, their defense is unmatched. The amount of hustle that everyone plays with on the court is what attributes to their offense on the other end, because they are so aggressive, because they are just all over the place. They are diving for loose balls. They're fast into back in transition. They're just creating so much offense by playing so much defense. And this was same thing that I saw last year. This is what Bruce Pearl does. This is how he coaches his guys up. It starts on the defensive end of the court. And if you play that well, then you're going to continuously get minutes. You'll get what I love what Jalen Williams does. I mean, his shooting has been so much better this year. If he can continue this stretch, I mean, right now he's shooting close to 60% from the field, almost 40% behind the arc. I mean, he's shooting fairly good. And the rest of the team, I know outside of Jani Broome, I feel like he's had a little bit of the struggles early on. We've talked about that. But the rest of the team has shot the ball pretty well, and you can't ask a lot more from them. But when you're going into SEC play, like you said, Greg, I hate Arkansas. We both hate Arkansas. I hate Arkansas fans. I'm not going to get started on that. But you look at the SEC, I know. You look at the SEC schedule as a whole, and the teams you're going to have to play, very offensive-minded teams. I think you look at Kentucky and what they've done. Of course, Alabama and what they like to do in the offensive end of the court. Arkansas has a little bit more of an offense now. They didn't when they first started playing this season. And then the teams outside of that, you can talk about Florida. I don't know if Auburn plays Florida at all. But there are definitely teams out there that have good offenses. And if Auburn plays the way that they've been playing since, I'll say the Appalachian State game, because I think that game got away from them. If they can play defense like that in those games, then they will get some of these bigger wins in the SEC. I'd really like to see them win against Arkansas. I really would. And I think that's what it's a tone setter. That game is a tone setter. Mm-hmm. If they can come out that Saturday and say, hey, we're going to go and just beat Arkansas and go out on the court and do it, then they will set up their success. And if not, I think they'll still be in a good spot. But beating Arkansas, man, that's just... That's a gift that keeps on giving right there.
That would be wonderful.
Yeah, I think that'd be wonderful.
48-10, Peyton Thorne just dominated Arkansas. Any Arkansas fans listening to this, y'all literally go sit down. Peyton Thorne ran all over y'all. Stop it.
Different sport, though, Gray. Different sport, though.
Arkansas right. It doesn't matter.
Arkansas is a transferred
property, Alex. Transferred property.
I think Auburn's, like y'all both touched on, really deep, really good defensively. I think you look at Auburn, there's about 7 or 8 guys that can give you about 20 any night, any game. Yeah. I mean, I think Katie Johnson, Trey Donaldson, I mean, anybody above those type of guys can light you up in a second. And I think Auburn set up for success this season. I think this is one of Bruce Pearl's best coaching jobs for the Tigers outside of maybe that Final Four run they had. I think this team is very talented, and I wouldn't be surprised if we're sitting here in March and Auburn somehow gotten it back into the Final Four because of how competitive they are defensively. And I know it's early, but that's the way they're playing right now, the chemistry they play with is absurd.
I'm not saying that they're
And when it comes to March, I mean, look at UConn. Final
Four.
I mean, look at UConn last year. The chemistry they had was huge, and the way they play defense was huge.
They also had some footers on their team.
I know, but you look at. UConn, they didn't have a true point guard. I know Tristan Newton was kind of their point guard. Jordan Hawkins was really good, but they didn't have that otherworldly type player that you were going to be quivering about. Auburn, kind of that same manner, but like both those teams really together, really good defensively. And I know they're not the exact same team as UConn. UConn was much better than Auburn. But I mean, like I said, I would not be surprised if Auburn's competitive in March. Great.
I wouldn't take it that far. I'd say I'll give him at least Elite Eight. I can see him getting there. There's some pieces that I still need to see a little bit more from. I'm not denying that they're a good team or anything. I think they're a very good team. I think they're on the verge of being an elite team. I just got to see a little bit more first before I start throwing out those little Final Four and stuff like that.
Yeah, I like to be the... Just throw stuff out there, see if they stick on the wall. Throw some spaghetti on the wall and see if they stick.
It's stuck on the wall for me, Alex. Don't worry.
It's stuck on the wall for you. You got to write it down, put it on your bulletin board back there, Final Four. I mean, like I said, the chemistry they have is wild, and that's a really big thing when it comes to March, is that be able to play together and play through one another.
I want spaghetti every year.
Don't hate on spaghetti. It's really good food.
I wasn't hating on the spaghetti either. I'm just saying, how do we even get there?
All right, that's all the time we have for today. Thank you for listening and watching, students of the game.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.